Thank you very much for the Divrei Hesped, and very much for the opportunity to present here this evening. It's always a schus to be here on this side of town, and now I know where to park. And Mirat Hashem will only come for Divrei Torah and Simchas. There's a man by the name of Aqib Talib. He's not a terrorist for ISIS. He's not a Hamas fighter. He's actually a defensive back for the Denver Broncos. And he's among the dirtiest players in the NFL today. He's somebody who was suspended for a game for intentionally poking the eye of an opposing player, which takes quite a little bit of chutzpah. On Sunday night, he continued his tactics. There was a pass that was towards the end zone, and he grabbed the wide receiver's face mask, spun the guy around, and he said that my teammates knew what it was. He was on the 3-yard line, right? Every score counts in any game, but especially in the Super Bowl. With a personal foul, he was on the 1.5-yard line. So it is what it is. It's probably going to be a fine, but hey, we're world champs, so who cares? Right? What's unique about Talib is not only how dirty he is and how much he cares about winning, which presumably every player on the field cares about, but he happens to be one of the safest players on the field when it comes to his own personal safety. You see, Talib has a special helmet that he wears. He's a 3-time Pro Bowl cornerback, and he is among the few who have a special type, the 5-star rated helmet among NFL players. There are about 17 different types of helmets that a player can choose from. It's a $355 million industry. When you think about 1,700 football players, professional football players, multiply that by college, different divisions, going down to high school. Some high schools are banning football. Pee-wee leagues, it's a big industry. Safety counts, because if the people die wearing your helmet, no one's going to buy your helmet anymore. The company goes out of business. So, according to data, there were 317 concussions reported by the NFL this year, which is quite a bit. Each team plays 16 games. There are 16 games per Sunday, and 317 players got concussions over the course of the season. So, you think that's a high number, but in fact, it's actually lower than it was the year before. 35% drop from 2012 to 2014, and concussions came down by 43%. So obviously, all this safety, this discussion about safety is having an impact. The NFL is trying to create a series of rules and regulations and protocols for players who have head injuries. They're not allowed to play a certain amount. They need to be checked out by doctors. But what they're not doing is they're not investing in the National Institute of Health study to help make the league a lot safer. And what the result is, there's a $16 million study into chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Now, encephalopathy literally means swelling of the brain. When you have chronic trauma that causes encephalopathy, so it turns out, we discovered, it causes brain damage. It's a disease. Slowly but surely, over the course of chronic, prolonged, repeat exposure to head trauma, the brain begins to change. They found it in Frank Giffords. They found it in a whole bunch of players as they're doing autopsies after they die. So what we find is that, yes, you may have somebody who gets a concussion every once in a while, but if you have a guy who's going for your head, using his body or his helmet as a weapon, and you're causing damage that's going to cause lifelong injury, so what are the implications of that kind of play? Are there any halachic implications? The title of the shiur is Alan Weingrad versus the NFL. Alan Weingrad was a offensive lineman who played for the Packers and for the Cowboys. So why did I choose him of all people? You see, last Shabbos was the 25th anniversary of Rabbi Shlomo and Karen Hochberg's serving as leaders of the Jamaica Estates community. Friday night, Rabbi Baruch Tav, who was formerly of the Young Israel of Buffalo, now of the Young Israel of Hollywood, a neighboring community, gave a talk, and it was entitled Rabbanus, Not for a Jewish Boy. So maybe it's not for a Jewish boy, it was really for a Jewish man. I wasn't there. Maybe Rabbi Schwartz, who was Rabbi Hochberg one of his earliest rabbinic mentors early on in his prolific rabbinic career. So is football a nice career for a Jewish boy? So we learned last week about the fact that there are implications of how we treat each other. There are halachos about governing how we act. If I cause damage to you, I'm on the hook. I'll need to pay a certain amount. Right? We don't just, I hit him with my head and he has a concussion, it's his problem, I go home scot-free. So the question I'd like to discuss is, what is the halachic implication of causing a brain injury to somebody else? And this is a topic that is near and dear to me because my brother, Alav HaShalom, was doing research. He was a neuroradiologist in Pittsburgh, and he was doing this research long before the NFL got involved in Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Whenever Ben Roethlisberger would get a concussion, his people would go off on a Sunday afternoon. They'd call him in. He'd take scans of Roethlisberger's head, track it over the course of time, and this is part of what they were trying to do. So it's always been something that's interesting to me, and it just happened to coincide with after Mishpatim, after the Super Bowl, and I thought it would be something interesting to share with all of you. So the Gemara talks to that in Maseches Brachos. We know that if the Mishnah tells us that if even afilu hamelech, even if a king comes shol b'shlomo and walks in, King George walks into this Beis Medrash in the middle of Maariv in a few minutes, and he says, "Hi, how are you? Shalom aleichem." So, could you respond? No, you shouldn't respond. So the Mishnah says, "Lo yishivenu." So, Tana Rabbanu, we have a story in the Gemara. Ma'aseh b'chassid echad shohi mispal b'derech. There was a person who was very pious, and he obviously knew the Mishnah, and he knew the halacha, and he's davening. He's on his way to work. Ba'hag monecha v'nasan lo shalom. So, a general comes along, sees him on the side of the road, and says, "Excuse me, hi, how are you?" Wants to check in on his welfare. Right? Obviously, the fact that he initiated conversation shows a little bit of humility on his part. He's willing to initiate the conversation, and he's waiting for a response. Now, this chassid, who clearly knows the halacha in the Feirsha Mishnah, lo hechser lo, he doesn't respond and say, "Shalom alecha hegemon." Himten lo ad shesim tfilaso. So the general really wants to give it to him. He's waiting. He doesn't just keep going and says a chutzpah and slap him across the face. He waits until he finishes his amida. La'achar shesim tfilaso amrlo. So when he finishes, he says to this chassid, "Reka, you foolish person, the halok siv b'toraskam, doesn't it say in your Torah?" He's not just a general, he also knows the Bible. "Rak yishtamar l'chor shmur nafshcha ma'od." You have to be very careful, you have to guard your nefesh. "Uksiv," and furthermore, "v'nishmartem ma'od l'nafshar seichem." You have to be very careful about how you conduct yourself. So he's saying, if you know the halacha is that I could kill you, so you have to respond. I'm here, I'm asking you shalom. Yeah, it says a Mishnah, but no, I'm carrying a sword, I'm carrying a loaded gun. I could kill you on the spot for being insubordinate. So the Rambam explains what exactly we're supposed to be learning from this. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Ratzeach Hushmiras HaNefesh, Echad HaGag VeEchad Kol Davar Sheyesh Bo Sakana. Anytime you have a roof, right? People fall off roofs. Somebody jumped off the bridge, off the George Washington Bridge last week. First time, I think the fourth time in history that they actually survived. Most of the time, right? But what's there to prevent everybody from falling off the bridge? The guardrail, the fence, the railing, whatever it is. There's an obligation to put up that type of protection. If you are concerned that there's a situation that exists in our community that could cause a fatality, so we have to protect ourselves. You have to put a fence up, right? The Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn has its basketball court on the roof of the yeshiva. So they're not just concerned about the basketball falling off the roof, they're concerned about the bachrim falling off the roof. So there's a big fence, a chain link fence up. Or if you have a well, you have to cover it up, make sure nobody falls into it, a construction site. Chas v'shalom, a person should fall into it unsuspectingly or accidentally, or somebody nudges him out of the way, and there he goes. Any time that you have a concern of mortal danger, mitzvah saseh lahasiro. We all have a mitzvah saseh, a positive Torah obligation to remove that concern, that danger from our environment. And to guard it, which is the fence. To put, not just, I'm going to put a cone up in front of it. You have to put something really sturdy that's going to protect even the accidental fall. How do we know this? The Rambam quotes a pasuk, our pasuk. He shavu lechashmur nafshcham od v'im lo yisir. And if you didn't do this, you're mevata hiniach mamechsholos hamevin lidei sakana. You just leave it. You leave it open. Bitel mitzah sasei ve'avra lo sasim damim be'isecha. You're not only over at Allah, but you're also mevata mitzah sasei. So we learn from this psukim that there's a mitzvah to remove any type of mortal danger from your environment. So if I'm davening and I see a guy holding a sword who wishes me shalom, who says shalom aleichem, so granted, it doesn't look like I'm going to fall off a roof. It doesn't look like a hole just opened up around me, but I should be conscious enough to realize that I'm now in a dangerous situation. I was before, I was just davening shmoneh esrei, and everything was fine. But the dangerous situation has come into my dalet amos. I need to react. I need to respond. How do I respond? Maybe he could take care of it. Maybe he should respond. He should interrupt his davening and say, Shalom Aleichem. Hopefully it won't take more than that. And he'll get back to his davening. That didn't happen. So he says, Kishinasati l'cha shalom. When the general says, when I said hello to you, Lama l'cha sarti l'shalom. How come you didn't respond? How could you ignore me? Ha'yisi chosech roshcha b'sayif. Right? If I would have killed you on the spot and I wouldn't have been a patient, nice guy to wait around and to see what spar you're going to throw at me, right? Would anybody have defended you if I were to go to court and say, you're guilty of manslaughter? No, I'm not. He's Marim B'malchus. I'm a general. Nobody would defend you. How could you do such a thing to ignore me? So Amrullah, he says, Hamtin li ad she'efayisra b'divarim. He says, hold on. I'd like to mount a rebuttal here. Amrlo, so he says, Ilu ha'yisa omei lifnei melech basar v'dam uba chaver chavanasan l'shalom. So let's say you're standing in front of King George, and he comes in for somebody comes, your friend walks in, instead of walking out, your friend walks in and says, hello, how are you? What would you do? Ha'yisi ma'achzer lo? Would you respond to him? Amrlo, love, of course not. How could I? The king, he's going to, even if he doesn't kill me, he'll throw me in jail. What happens, right? You tell me that you wanted me to respond. So if I would have followed your svara and I would have said, okay, I'm going to respond like he wants me to. So what would happen if you were in my shoes and you would respond? Amrlo, he says, if you'd knock my head off, you'd kill me. Amrlo, so he says, so why isn't this logical to you? Why is it clear to me, but it's not clear to you? So if you're going to act this way towards somebody who's mortal, to a king whose reign over his kingdom is perhaps several decades at most, you're going to ignore him. If I'm standing before the King of Kings, the master of the universe, whose reign is eternal, so certainly, if you're not going to respond to the live king, I'm not going to respond to the HaKadosh, I'm not going to ignore HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So miyad nispayo so say hagman v'niftaro so chasa l'veso l'shalom. It's a good svara. It's a good thing he waited. Instead of being angry, and who knows what happened, he'd go back to his palace and he would say, oh, those Jews, we need to eradicate the town and get rid of them. He was willing to hear him out, and he heard Taka, he was right. He was right. He gave him a good explanation. Question is, how does this relate to our topic? So the Minchas Chinuch asks, the pasuk that we quoted is v'nishmartem me'od, it's not l'nafsho seichem. And the other pasuk that we quoted, hishamar l'cha shmur nafshecha me'od. What does nefesh mean? My nefesh. My soul. So am I putting my soul in danger? By extension, perhaps. But immediately, my soul is not in danger. It's my guf that's in danger. I'm at risk of bodily, mortal harm. So ask the chinuch, I don't understand where this is coming from. Why is the Gemara bringing this as a raya that I need to protect my body from a general when the course of tefillah that I should protect myself from and remove myself from a dangerous situation when it's not what the pasuk is talking about? The Gemara seems to be misinterpreting the pasuk in the Torah. So we bring another Gemara. The Gemara in Shabbos. Used to be that bloodletting was a very common thing. I think it used to be common even when we were younger. I remember watching, I don't know, some science class, some video of a leech, right? And they would put them on the body, and maybe they do it in Africa. They used to do it in the time of the Gemara. But not every day and not every time. Sorry?
In Europe.
They still do it in Europe.
They did it in Europe.
And you go to a spa in the Alps, and they put a leech on your body, and you come back, you feel like $1 million. So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Persa didama kol tlisin yamin. So the best time for a person to have their blood let is once a month. Right, more than that, they're going to take too much out of you. I think the same rules apply if you want to donate blood. You can't, there are people who like to, sometimes blood banks give out prizes. So there are people who go, who as often as they can, if they think that it keeps them healthy, just like the leeches used to do, or still do. And they would go every month or so. Bein haprakim, let's say you hit, you're zocha to hit the age of 40, yamit, so you should reduce it. It should be every 2 months. Bein haprakim, let's say you get to 60, you're really zocha. Yachzer v'yamit, yish again. Reduce the frequency with which you're letting your blood, you're donating your blood, to every 3 months. So what days, right? Let's say if I want to set my schedule and I want to know, okay, this week I'm up to my fourth week, I'm back in the rotation. So what day of the week should I go to the blood bank? Chad b'Shabbata on Sunday, Arba on Wednesday, Umali Shabbata, or on Friday. So aval sheni v'chamishi lo, but not Monday or Thursday. Why? It's because davening takes too long and you're already going to get to work late? No. The Amar Mar, because the Gemara that we know, mishi yesh lo zchus avos, a person who has the zchus avos, who has protection or ancestral protection because his grandparents were tzaddikim, yakiz dan b'sheni v'chamishi. So there's such a person who's really on a high madrega, and it's not even his own zchusim, but his ancestors, he should go on Monday and Thursday. He cuts, he goes when there's not such a long line. Shabbat and Shalmala v'shalmata shavim ke'echad. Why? What's the big deal about Monday and Thursday? So we know that back in the time of the Gemara, this is especially relevant to Purim, the whole thing, the beginning of Maseches, Megillah talks about this. When would you read the Megillah? So Monday and Thursday is when everybody came in to town, the Bezdin was sitting and being done, all the cases. So the Gemara is telling us that we think that whatever happens here, right? Beis Din is, it's between me and you. I take you to Beis Din, you take me to Beis Din. Kadosh Baruch Hu, as long as we find a pshara, which is ideal according to the Gemara, or you have mishpat, you have real din, that's yashar and emes with dayanim who are not going to distort the halacha. So that result is not only what happens down here, but it's also in Bezdin Shalmala is also meaning at the same time. So there's an impact not only here, but there. So what does that mean? That means that there's a spiritual effect. There's an extra sense of din in the world on Monday and Thursday because we're meeting here and they're meeting up there. And so if there's din in the air, right, if there's justice, if there's judgment in the air, then this is actually something that's risky, right? Let's say the leech goes a little too far. It goes a little bit off where it's supposed to go, and you end up, chas v'shalom, bleeding out. So we wouldn't want to take this risk in any scenario on any given day. It has to be limited to the other days when there's less risk and less judgment in the air. So, okay, so that's Monday and Thursday is knocked off. But the Gemara says Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. What happens to Tuesday? And what happens to Tuesday? So there the Gemara says there's a different reason. Because there's some influence, and this could be a different discussion, that there's an influence of Mars. Right? We know that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about astrology as something being something very serious and very real. It does have an impact, even if we don't think that Ein Mazal Yisrael, it doesn't impact us directly, but there is an opportunity for things to happen as a result of this certain astrological symbol, signs and configurations. So on Tuesday, on the even hours of the day, there is some extra impact of Mars. So now who cares about Mars? Mars happens to be affiliated with epidemics. So if I'm concerned about my health, I'm letting my blood to get healthy, then I'm not going to want to do it at the time or on the day where there's more likely to have a medical epidemic in the world. So I'm going to stay away from Tuesday. So there's also this concern, the Gemara says, that this also exists. There's some impact of Mars on Friday also. So here, the Gemara says, Kevin didashaba rabim, Hashem or Psaim Hashem. So Friday, it just happened, you're right, the Gemara says. You're right. Really, we shouldn't be having our blood let on Friday. But everybody does it. it's almost like Marisayim. The first guy who served pan of ice cream for dessert at a wedding was over on Marisayim. But now everybody knows that whoever's serving ice cream for dessert, it's going to be Pariv, and it's no longer a halachic problem. It's not Marisayim. Nobody would be choshe that you don't know, that your caterer doesn't know Hilchos Kashrus. Certainly never in Elizabeth or Hillside. So what does this mean? The Gemara is saying that the Mefarshim explain what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that they usually, when you let blood, it's healthy to have fish afterwards. So, unfortunately, in the times of the Gemara, we didn't always have as much access to delicious fish at a reasonable price as we do today. And so they would save it up. It would be something that was oneg Shabbos, right? Gefilte fish. So you'd have fish on Shabbos. So if you're having fish on Shabbos and fish is good after you have your blood let, then it makes sense that you would reserve bloodletting for Erev Shabbos so that you could enjoy it after you do the bloodletting on Erev Shabbos. You'll have the fish on Shabbos, so it fits. So, yeah, you're right. You should not be doing it on Erev Shabbos because we're concerned about an epidemic, but enough people are doing it that Shomer P'saim Hashem. What does that mean? Shomer P'saim Hashem. It means Hashem is going to protect us from our foolish ways. If we do something stupid, so we hope that Hashem is going to protect us. The Mefarshim explain that it only refers to Hashem is not going to. If I jump off the George Washington Bridge, I don't deserve divine protection. Hashem shouldn't protect me. I'm doing something incredibly dangerous. But if I'm letting my blood, and maybe it's not this hour, right? It's only on the even hours. And the Ran is the one who says that we expand it to the entire onah, so that if it's during the day, it's an even hour of the day, so it's going to be all the hours of the daytime and not only that specific hour. So maybe once we're not being so precise, we're extra careful. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to protect us, that it's really going to be fine. The Ritva tries to be magdir what exactly Shomer P'saim Hashem refers to. And he says that we can rely on Hashem's protection, but we don't need to know 100% that we're going to be safe. We can estimate that there's some level of risk that we can take. So you could argue that any time more people die, let's say in Israel, from car crashes than from going into Yerushalayim, walking on the streets and getting stabbed, chas v'shalom, on the streets of Yerushalayim. So does that mean that a person, and there are people, right, the people who don't want to go to Yerushalayim, they'll say, it's usur, it's a sakana to go to Yerushalayim. That's ridiculous. But would you say that it's dangerous to go in a car? More people die in a car than anything else. So no, there is some level of risk, and every person, if you know how to drive, you take driver's ed, and you have a license, and you drive carefully, so you know that there's some level of risk that you're willing to assume on yourself when you get into the car and you head out on the road. So the Ritva leaves it up to you. You don't have to be 100% sure that what you're doing, that you'll arrive safely from point A to point B, but a reasonable effort should be made. Rav Avadya Yosef says it's something else. He writes, that the only time that you can be someich on Shomer P'saim Hashem on divine protection is if it's a case where you're putting yourself in harm's way for the sake of fulfilling a mitzvah. So really, it's not just Shomer P'saim Hashem, but it's also that since you're involved in a mitzvah, so Hashem is going to protect you because he wants everybody to know that that's when you're deserving of divine protection. Hashem doesn't want you to, chas v'shalom, be injured in the process of fulfilling a mitzvah. What's the problem with our Gemara? I'll wake everybody up, it's getting late. What's the problem with our, yeah? What's the mitzvah? Right, I'm doing bloodletting, so that's a mitzvah? That's not a mitzvah. There are lots of things I could do for my health, but doing it on a time that the Gemara says beferish could be potentially dangerous because of the concern, if we don't do it on Tuesday, so why don't we do it on Tuesday also, once we're going to ignore the concern of the astrological implications of bloodletting. Very good. So he continues, he says, Ulam b'ikr mashakasam t'la shayach shomer p'saim Hashem el b'makam mitzvah. So l'chora, this doesn't apply b'msecha Shabbos. Gabi hakasam stam b'erev Shabbos. The Gemara says, Kevin d'dashu b'rabim shomer p'saim Hashem. So the Gemara says, everybody does it, we need it. So Rashi says, Shehur galubam b'pnei docha. Right, the point is that it was b'docha, they had to, because they couldn't afford to get fish on Wednesday or Sunday. Shehu smuchin l'suda Shabbos, they would save it up. Shekavod Shabbos bedugim gedolim, right? It's the Gemara, you know, says in many places about the importance, the inyan of kavod Shabbos. That you know, if you don't have enough cholent for Shabbos, don't eat it tonight. Put it away. Bring it home. Put it in your crock pot. Save it for Shabbos. So al karch therefore al kain alma to mishum duchka ba alma avdi hachi. So they did it only because they had to. But that's still not. Right, if Rav Avadya's shita is that you can only be somech on shomer psayim Hashem when it's b'makom mitzvah, so b'makom dochkan is not the same thing. So how does he square this up? He b'nidan didad b'makom tzorech or prat l'chavod Shabbos shehu mitzvah. So since kavod Shabbos and oneg Shabbos is a mitzvah, therefore the tzorech of saving the fish for Shabbos allows us to have the bloodletting done in Erev Shabbos at Mishum Dochak because of the connected, affiliated Kavod Shabbos that comes along with it. So either it's B'makom Mitzvah, it should be B'makom Dochak as long as it's connected to being B'makom Mitzvah. The Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us that a person is allowed to take a risky job. You can climb a high tree, and you can risk your life, right? You have the people who climb right in the parking lot next to my office building in Clifton. They put up a new cell tower. So those guys must be making big bucks. Who are willing to risk their lives. It's very windy, it's cold, and they've, you know, as many belts and loops as you want to tie onto yourself, it's still pretty dangerous going up there all alone. So can a nice Jewish boy be an engineer to set up a cell tower like that? So the Gemara says yes. That you can be maser atzma lamisa al scharo, on the condition that you're able to get paid for it, right? If you wanted to just, you know, climb up for kicks, right? There were videos of people who climbed the World Trade Center tower, the spire, I think, or some poles when it was under construction, just to get themselves on YouTube. So for that would probably be an issur. That would be usur, because we do know of nishmartim ol nafshaseichem, and there's no money coming out of it. You could monetize that, but it's not a profession. It's not a job, even if somebody pays you to be the daredevil or evil Knievel. So, most people can't monetize that in a way to support themselves. I think, you know, let's say you make $1,000 from it. It's a one-shot thing. You know, it's not a job. So, there's a tshuva that Rabbi Bromrin once showed me when I was in 10th grade. JEC was going on a paintball trip. And not everybody wanted to go paintballing, right? The cool guys wanted to go paintballing. The less cool guys were afraid of getting totally killed or badly injured by the cool guys who had gone paintballing before or were stronger. And so to be mefayes, the people who didn't want to go, Roy Bomberman took out the Noda B'Yehuda and showed us this tshuva, which was... So we didn't... The maskana of the sheet of the Noda B'Yehuda is not what the yeshiva ended up doing, but it was important chizuk to provide to those boys who weren't interested in going and wanted to sit out. And he says as follows: Me'ata ech yachnes atzmo ish yehudi l'makom gedolei chayos ra'os. Right? How can you go and be a hunter? Not for empire that you want to get venison, but you want to be the guy, you want to bring the deer or the boar to the taxidermist to bring that in and cash that in for thousands of dollars. But in order to do that, you need to go out into the middle of nowhere in a hunting area and camouflage, and you put yourself at risk. Why? Because there could be 15 other people who are trying to get that same animal, and when you're wearing camouflage, I've never done this, but I would imagine that they might mistake you for the animal that everybody's going for. So you're putting yourself in mortal danger for the sake... You say no?
They identify themselves as about hunters and they never get seen.
What if you go hunting with this chain?
How do you do that? Right. I mean, how do you identify yourself without the animal identifying you also?
They wear orange vests.
They wear orange vests. And the animals don't see the orange vests?
No, they wear it that the animal can't see it. The other hunters know you're out.
Okay. The animals don't necessarily understand that you're supposed to be there. You're sucking at the animal also.
Right. So perhaps in the time of the Noda B'Yehuda, they weren't wearing orange vests. So he asks, how could this is not, this doesn't seem to be a nice profession for a nice Jewish boy. So let's say you're poor and you really have nothing else, but you're a good shot and you know that you can do this. So to do it for your profession, lezeh haTorah hetiru kama kol schor yamim me'avar liyam. Right, just like you wouldn't probably go out on a cruise ship to go out on a boat that goes out in the middle of a storm, as one of the cruise ships did last week. It's a dangerous profession to go out at sea for weeks on end. You know, even if you're on a big sturdy ship like they make today. So there, you're saying, you're going to put yourself into sakana because you may not come back. And it happened. There were people who were lost at sea and their wives became agunos, and it depended on, you know, what kind of body of water were they in. So he's saying, just like it's mutter to be a ship hand or to work on a boat, it's also mutter for the sake of your job to put yourself into a pretty dangerous situation to be a hunter. Shekoma shulitzorach mechiaso parnasaso ein breira. So you have no choice. If you decide this is a legitimate profession and this is how I'm going to make a living, then the Torah is going to say, okay, Shor Psaim Hashem will protect you from that. Torah Amra Ba'Allah who knows Sayas Nafsha. Amra Rabbi Yosina Zrachon Lavracha. Ipneiz Mazes, he quotes the Gemara in Shavuos. Avamisha Einik or Kavanasal Mechiaso. Right? But let's say this isn't your job. You just want to go out for sport. Umitavas libo, chayos, besakana. So let's say you just want to go out and you just want to shoot around. Hareza over alvanishmartim o lenafshar secha. So said Rabbi Bamrind, an extension of the Noda Behuda, it's one thing if you want to learn how to shoot and you want to make yourself a professional hunter. But otherwise, people get injured with paintball, even though they're wearing padding and they're wearing helmets, and it causes a welt on a bruise on a person's body. We'll get to that in a moment. So, Bitsiruf, there's plenty of grounds not to go paintballing or to say that it's aser. I was talking to Rav Willig earlier today, but I forgot to ask him. Rav Willig holds that even going skiing could be dangerous, or playing ice hockey could be dangerous because of the force and the impact, the speed at which you're skating or skiing downhill. People have died. They lose control of their skis. They slam into a tree and they bleed. They hemorrhage out. So it's not limited to back in the olden days. You want to talk about bungee jumping or jumping out of a plane at thousands of miles above the ground.
How do we determine what risk is acceptable and what risk is not acceptable? Thousands more people, maybe millions more people, die in car accidents and ski accidents every year.
Right.
And no one would ever say that it's usher to drive. I mean, some people would say it's usher to drive, but...
Right. So, in most cases, society determines that there are millions of drivers on the roads.
Right.
And only a very small fraction of them are killed each year.
Right.
Right? And what percentage of them are drunk and end up killing themselves versus killing other people? So the percentage is pretty small. Baruch Hashem. And so therefore, as the Ritva, and I think Rav Shachter also writes in Bikvei Atzon, I believe, it says that if it's something that's not reason, that you decide, that you have a little bit of personal license here, to decide, is this something I'm willing to assume? Right? And most people who go, right, all of us, I think, drove today, and all of us are here now, so we can decide that most people who drive are going to be safe. But if you go skiing...
Today's society, don't you think things like skiing or paintball or whatever other sport that's considered ridiculously dangerous, wouldn't they be banned if they were considered an unacceptable risk?
So it depends on what society determines. Who's the person who's looking?
So who's the arbiter of what is reasonable risk and what's unreasonable risk?
So I guess Rav Willig would say that it's unreasonable. If it's not for your parnasa, there's no real good reason for you to put yourself into the line of fire, literally, of an incoming pellet of paint that causes damage and could end up going the wrong way, and it happens. So yes, most of the time people just get hurt, but why would you do that? And if you put that betzirif with the no de Yehuda, that, you know, a person shouldn't be going out hunting, it's not safe. So I think there's, you know, what to talk about there. But many others will say skiing is fine. Now, you know, thousands of people, millions of people go skiing. Look, you know, how many people get injured when they go to Vail on an annual basis? I don't know the statistics. Even if you say that there are 317 concussions in the NFL and there are 1,700 players who play 16 games a year plus playoffs, it's still a small percentage. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be wearing Talib's helmet, the best helmet that you can, and try to and protect yourself. Right, so maybe Rav Willig would say that if you're on the slow slope, the little slopes, and you're wearing protective gear, then maybe that might be different. I don't know. I forgot to ask him today.
Has had hits are now banned.
Right, but that's
he's still not able to go with this, but they're not officially.
Yeah, but you have a guy who doesn't care. It's only a fifth. No, it's only a fifth. You know, one and a half year penalty. He's willing to take the hit to win the game. Right.
But most players abide by the rules, and they don't get penalized.
Right. So, going from shooting paintball into chavala. So let's say you have a person who wants to lower his shoulders and injure you. He's not in it just to tackle you. He wants to knock you out. He wants to take you out of the game. You're the star quarterback. He wants to make sure that you're not going to be able to play for the rest of the season. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Chovel HaMazik, Asur La'adam Lachbol Bein Ba'atzmo Bein V'Chavero. So you're not allowed to injure yourself. Right? Your body doesn't belong to you. Your Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you your guf to serve your nefesh, and it's not yours. So you have no right to injure yourself. You also have no right to injure anybody else. Anybody who hits another person, another member of Klal Yisrael, bein katan, bein gadol, whether it's an adult or a child, bein ish, bein isha, whether it's a man or a woman, derech nitzayon hareze over below sase. So if you're doing it for the purpose of really injuring them, and you're doing it for a
malicious
purposes, right? It's not just accidental. You're intentionally trying to hurt them. You're being malicious. That's Osir. How do we know? Hareza over below sase, lo yosef lahakoso. So when the Torah tells us about the process of justice, a person violates a mitzvah lo sase, and they have hasra, and they get malkos, so the bezdin has to be very careful not to hit them one more time than they deserve. So let's say they deserve a full lamentas, 39 malkos. So okay, the Gemara, the pasuk says 40. What's the big deal if I hit him one more time? It's 1 out of 39%, a very small percentage. No, there's an issur against that. Bezin has to be very careful. They have to count. There has to be somebody who's making sure that they're keeping track of where they're up to. So we see from that. So the Rambam says, "Im hazira haTorah shelo lahosif akasa chote." So if that issur exists when it comes to somebody who deserves punishment, then we're not allowed to give him even an iota, even one more lash than he absolutely deserves. So certainly somebody who doesn't deserve this kind of onesh, you're absolutely not allowed to hit them. So if that's the case, so there's no heter for us to cause damage to another person. So if you're going to lower your shoulder pads, you're going to take out your paintball gun, and you're not shooting for his chest, where I've never actually gone paintballing, but if you're aiming for that crack between his helmet and his neck, so that you get it lodged in, you really do serious damage, right? That's usur. Rashi points out in Yevamos that it doesn't only refer to a physical injury that you can see, a bruise on an external wound. What that means is, and what we can suggest is that if it also includes an internal wound, then maybe the concussion that you cause when you knock somebody's head in over and over again, if you're the defensive lineman and you're practicing on a regular basis with your quarterback, and you're just trying to sharpen your skills, perhaps that cumulative effect, the cumulative chavala that you're doing week after week, can also be considered asr. There's a defensive endman named J.J. Watts. He plays for the Houston Texans, who was quoted in an article last week. There was a lot of discussion about this last week. He says that there was a risk. He knew that there was a risk when he decided to play football. Quote, "I think there's a big perception that players have been shocked by the concussion news that has come out. While we're all learning about it and do understand that there are serious implications that come with it, I don't think any of us got into this game thinking we're not going to get hit in our heads." So if you understand that that's what's going to happen, can you put yourself into a situation where you're going to hurt somebody? If you know it's usur. So is football a game for a Jewish person if you know the second you step out on the field with pads on, you might get hurt? And you might cause injury to somebody else, even if you didn't intend to do so. And it may not be readily apparent during practice or even during the season. It may take years for that effect to be apparent to a loved one who sees that their husband's cognitive state is declining seriously, not only because of dementia, but perhaps because of the number of concussions and the traumatic impact and the encephalopathy that ensues.
Should apply to any contact sport as well. Basketball,
it should.
Hockey, anything.
Presumably it would.
Well, you have less than
But I think there are fewer concussions. I don't know the statistics on hockey.
It's not concussions, but
baseball for sure, right? You wouldn't.
I'm saying forget concussions, though. I mean, there are other. I mean, you go to a basketball game, how many fouls are there? So clearly, people are getting injured.
Right.
Halakhically, you're hitting somebody. I mean, and how many basketball players? What are they doing to damage themselves? Their knees are not going to last.
Right.
And you know for a fact that you run back up and down a court a certain amount of times, your knees are not going to last.
So what happens? I think in the case that you brought the fouls in basketball, I think you could draw a distinction, because a person doesn't usually, unless it's a flagrant foul. Most fouls are inadvertent and intentional.
You're not
trying to really hit the person. Yeah. Football, hockey, you have defenders, you have enforcers. They're really trying to hit. They're controlling their body and directing themselves towards the other person.
You set a pick on someone, they're going to go flying. You know what's going to happen.
Depends how hard you set yourself up and how big you are.
Chronic overeating.
Chronic overeating. So there.
Nathan's
hot dog eating contest. There's no chaval. I mean, you could.
Probably the most costly thing in America today.
You could argue. You could make the argument that eating bad food on a consistent basis causes damage to your body. Be hard to prove that in a. That would fall within v'nishmarta mother nafsho seifa. You need to take care of yourself. You need to not eat things that you shouldn't be eating, and you should. Right, I think that would be a good. Sorry. Okay, I'll have to look that up. Ayin Sham. So, what if you wanted a person wanted to feel pain? I have a client who likes to rip his cuticles off. And he's just, he needs the feeling to keep himself alive because he's in so much pain otherwise. So would you say that he would not be allowed to do that, but even though he derives some benefit from it? So Rav Moshe says that if the point is that you want to hurt yourself, but you're not really feeling pain, you're doing it because it makes you feel good. So Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva that would be mutter. Even though you're hurting, objectively, we could say you're hurting yourself, but for you, it's not hurting, it's actually giving you some element of hana. What if you cause him a concussion? Now, he says, if it's, so when J.J. Watts gets on the field, and he knows that he's going to cause damage, or somebody's going to hurt him, so there's presumably an agreement among all the players that we're going to hurt each other. And we waive our right to sue each other, because that's what football is all about. So Rav Moshe writes, "Mistaver shal chavala katana kazu shehu gam belo tsar velo boshes." So you have a little thing, right? You see the linemen; they've got scratches on their arms. They're bleeding in the middle of the game. They don't care. To them, it's nothing. It's meaningless. For something small like that, and ein ze derech nitzayon uvizayon, it's not something that's malicious. When you're walking out on the field, you're giving them permission to knock you down, however necessary. Ve'ein machben al ze she'eino over be Lo Yosef to Kederach Schok Ba'alma. All you're doing is you're playing a game. What's the big deal? The Halav Eino Over Alekashu Derech Nitzayon Vizayon. So it's only if you're really trying to do it maliciously. Of the Chaval Gedola Shu Derech Nitzayon Vizayon Lo Toil Nisinas Harshus L'Salik Ha'Isur Me'alav Me'Achar Sha'af Hu Atzmo Asur Lachba Ba'Atzmo. So just like you can't damage yourself, you're not allowed to go and bang your head into a wall and give yourself a concussion that's going to knock yourself out, so too you don't have rishus to put yourself on a field in a way that you could leave yourself susceptible or vulnerable to have that major injury that you'd have to be carted off for. So it would seem like in that case, if you know that you're going to have your head bashed in, as this lineman says, then maybe it's not appropriate for a Jewish person who's concerned about halacha to be walking out onto a football field, even recreationally, if you're concerned about that level of injury. There is a precedent which we're unfortunately not going to be able to address, and that is boxing. There was Chuvos on boxing, where Rav Unterman writes it, Yossi, I think this connects to your point. He says, the point of boxing, right, what are the rules of boxing? The point is the person has to go down for 3 seconds. There's a 3-second, 3-count, whatever it is. So there, the point of boxing is not to box the guy's brains out and to cause him to bleed and to, be not a mensch. The point is to hit him hard enough that he collapses and he falls down. So he says, therefore, if you're playing clean, and your point is not derech nitzayon, your point is to do a derech schok, as Rav Moshe says, you're playing a game, right? I'm stronger if we're equal. If it's a match of equals, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Maybe wrestling, but not boxing. How are you going to get the guy down? You're going to hit him hard enough that he falls down.
I hear.
Clearly you're doing damage to the person.
So you would disagree with him. The only reason I mentioned that tshuva is because I think you can apply that to basketball. In basketball, the point is not to knock the guy down. If you do that, you know you'll get suspended or expelled, or you know, kicked out of the league. You have a foul, so that's an inadvertent, usually, type of error. And your intention is never, your point is to block the guy from going getting to the basket, not to knock him down. Because there the penalty is too severe and will be intolerable. So I think basketball would, you know, you could sooner hear a heter to play even from Rav Willig. Haraya, Rav Willig plays basketball in Maharsha Kolel, and nobody ever fouls him because you don't want to be the guy to be over on Chavala on Rav Willig. But, you know, other sports he would not play. And for reasons that, you know, you could understand in light of this evening's share.
Fantastic. I want to thank Rabbi Blazer. I also want to let him know that I did foul Rabbi Willig.
No, you didn't.